We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
2 seconds.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire podcast and the Eurostep podcast network. We've got an exciting collab episode in store for you today because the Bucks are in the finals. I don't know if you all have heard, but the Milwaukee Bucks are in the NBA finals. I am Ty Windisch, one of your Eurostep hosts. I am joined, as always, by the critically acclaimed Rohan Kadi. Rohan, how's it going?
I'm doing well. The initial high of the NBA finals, like we get to cover this, it still hasn't worn off yet. But it's go time. We have to go right now. Like it's starting up today.
Yeah, we're here. It's here quickly. And to get ready for it, a crash course on the Phoenix Suns and how this series will presumably look, we've tag teamed with the hosts of The Timeline, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, Mike Vigil and Sam Cooper, the excellent host of that pod. We had a long discussion about all sorts of things in this series, some big questions. Rohan, you want to give a quick rundown of some of the big topics we covered?
Yeah, like you said, we tackled a lot of the big questions. We talked matchups, we talked defensive schemes, we talked adjustments, coaching, sort of how injuries play into this. We go into everything. So make sure you listen to the full episode.
Listen to the full episode here. Subscribe, rate, review if you haven't already. And then check out the timeline for the other perspective of all of these games. I know it can be difficult to do that, especially if you're a Bucks fan listening, as most of our audience is. If you're just an NBA fan, certainly go check them out. But even Bucks fans, they do great work. One of my truly favorite podcasts to listen to. And apparently there's going to be a super cool intro of this same episode. So at least check that out. Great production work on display. But yeah, we had a long combo. We think you're going to enjoy it. So here it is.
All right, guys, I want to start with what I think is the most obvious question for this series, so we can just get it out of the way from the beginning here. And that is, how will health factor into this series? And I think this is sort of the story in a lot of ways of the entirety of the season and the playoffs in general. And just injuries in general. Like at this point of the season, everyone's playing with something. Chris Paul just had a MRI on his wrist. Here's a stat. Devin Booker, before breaking his nose, had a 61% true shooting percentage in the playoffs. After breaking his nose, 46% Yikes. True shooting in the playoffs. So a massive difference there. Cameron Payne had his best game of the playoffs, 29 points, 8 assists, 0 turnovers, and then rolled his ankle in the next game and has not passed 7 points since then in the 3 games since then. So there's another difference there. But the most obvious, the most glaring injury of all, is Giannis Antetokounmpo, who has not yet played since hyperextending his knee against the Hawks in, I believe, game four, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know how much there is necessarily for us to talk about when talking about how much injuries will affect the series, but I think we can talk about especially from your guys' perspective, guys from the Eurostep podcast, as far as what the Bucks look like without Giannis and how that could go if he does or doesn't play. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've looked probably better than a lot of people, myself and Rohan included, expected over a two-game sample so far. Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday certainly stepped up in game five against Atlanta. Brook Lopez stepped up in a massive way. I think that'll probably be harder for him to do against DeAndre Ayton than it was against Clint Capella, who I think a lot of Capella's defensive renown has to do with him being kind of bouncy and switchable, and he's kind of small and just hard for Lopez to deal with. DeAndre Ayton, not small. There's my first piece of expert analysis on the pod. But I think they looked good. I think the Bucks looked good. But I do think it was a little – it had fever dream aspects. So I'm hoping that, you know, we get at least limited Giannis from the very start of this series. Like game six, I mean, Jeff Teague was incredible. That's not something you expect. Pat Connaughton's been good the whole run, but he was hitting threes. The Bucks as a team have not hit many the whole postseason run. So I just think and Jrue Holiday was so good and I think very up and down for most of the playoffs and then really turned it up when they needed him. Hopefully that's not random variance for two games. Hopefully it just shows that maybe Jrue was biding his time and trying to let other guys, namely Chris and Giannis, command the ball more and just get more in the offensive scoring action earlier in the run and then was able to step up on command when needed. But I do think, like, you know, do I expect the Bucks to look great in a prolonged amount of games against Phoenix if Giannis can't play? No, I think they'd look okay. I think this is a very resilient team, but I do think, like, they need Giannis back. For all the Skip Bayless takes about, oh, are they better without him? Is Batman without Robin? All this. No, it's stupid. The guy's a two-time MVP. He's awesome. They're much, much better when he plays. Please, Giannis, be well soon.
Yeah, I think one of the main things you hit on there, Ty, is this team showed its resiliency. We saw a lot of times during the postseason before Giannis went out, this team just started so slow early on in series, early on in games. They didn't have that drive, really. They weren't playing with pace. That's not like entirely Giannis' fault. I'm not saying that. But once Giannis went down, the entire team sort of realized, like, oh, okay, we got to go do this now. Like, we just lost our best player. So you saw that in games four and five. They started out, five and six. They started out hot. They played with pace. They played with aggression. They were attacking more than they have been. They were getting to the rim, which we had been begging them to do for the entire series. It seemed like a team that actually had like motivation. Like, oh, okay, we have to go and out there and do this now. Without Giannis for another series, I don't know if that's going to be something that can realistically hold up, especially against a team as good as Phoenix. With Giannis, you hope that this team sort of keeps that same energy going, especially because it's the NBA Finals now. This is the big moment. This is the biggest stage. You want to see that same sort of level of intensity that you saw without Giannis, but now you have Giannis.
I have to say, one of the things I'm most appreciative of the fact that we have this matchup against you guys as the Bucks specifically is I think both fan bases and both teams are in a pretty similar emotional place with our confidence. Having won multiple games, you guys won multiple games without Giannis. We won multiple games without Chris Paul. And to your point, Rowan, I think like that did similar things for both fan bases of understanding, oh, these are teams that can overcome some level of adversity. Obviously, you still say you're the best team with your superstar available, but that doesn't mean the other guys are just going to roll over. To what you were saying, Ty, a little bit, I know you were talking about Skip Bayless there, and I'm by no means am I going to say that the Bucks are better without Giannis. I'm expecting him to suit up in game one based on the limited info we have now. I'm expecting to game plan for him, and I'm expecting him to be a handful. However, do you think there's an element of, like, if Giannis does rush back, hopefully they wouldn't rush him back, right? But, like, if he does come back, there's a pressure associated with the NBA Finals. If he does come back and he's like 70 or 80% of what he normally is, or even less, like let's say 60% from the start of the series, do you think there's an element of, well, we would almost rather, because so much of what Giannis is gonna lose with his athleticism, his first step, his ability to get downhill and like kill you in transition, like that's the type of stuff that would go with a knee injury. So is it almost like, well, we would rather put Jrue and Chris in a position where they have to force it rather than watch Giannis take like high elbow jumpers for game one, like, because you're just not really gonna, you're not really gonna win that way if that's your strategy, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the whole time really you were breaking down the scenario, I was thinking about like what's the worst case for how Giannis looks, further injury aside, for coming back. And the worst case is like he's out on the perimeter a lot and Phoenix just completely ignores him. And as a response, he takes a lot of jumpers because he doesn't want to drive repeatedly. That would be bad. We've seen a much better utilized Giannis in the regular season and especially in the playoffs, where he's getting the ball in the elbow, kind of in post position. He's worked on his fadeaway a little bit, sort of on his hook shot, although that's the number one thing I'd like to see him work on more. But you see him busting out these other moves to really, I think, avoid constant charge fouls that he's gotten in years past against the smaller defenders. I mean, that's been the book on guarding Giannis, right? Is put someone Jay Crowder sized on him, have them fall over, and Giannis gets in foul trouble and turns the ball over a lot, and it's bad. So I think if Giannis is going to play, and everybody on the Bucks knows he's not going to be able to rampage like usual, I think you need to bust him out, utilized in much better scenarios. And I think pick and rolls, like as a role man, is one. But I think really like getting him more post possessions, letting him play make and or score from there, just so it's a little harder for the Suns to ignore him offensively. I think the Bucks are really going to have to be smart with how they reintroduce him to the lineup. And I think thankfully we've seen much more adjustments, proactive adjustments even, from Mike Budenholzer, although I'm not one to, you know, completely trust Bud by any means. I do think we've seen some things like the way they defended without Giannis starting in game five. I mean, scram switches off the ball, Brooke Lopez switching and holding up, not letting Capella post up like Jrue Holiday. Actually, they're fine with Jrue, but, you know, the smaller players like Chris. But I don't know. I'm fairly confident that they'd use him well, but Giannis is... You know, Giannis likes to play the way Giannis likes to play, although we have seen that evolve a little bit as the playoffs have gone on too. But Rohan, would love to hear your thoughts on this topic.
Yeah, we've seen a hampered Giannis in the past, given we have no idea what's going to happen with this injury because we haven't seen this before with Giannis. But we've seen Giannis go through knee injuries in the past and sort of play a little hampered, we'll say. And regardless of whether he's at full strength, ready to go or anything, he is still going to command a lot of attention at the rim. He's still like a massive human being who's insanely strong and can still put pressure on the rim, regardless of whether he's at full strength or not in terms of his knee, just because of his sheer length, just his power down low. But when we've seen those sort of circumstances happen before, like Ty, you were getting to this, we've seen him being put in a lot of better positions in terms of playmaking. He's been making the right pass. He's been making the right reads, especially during this postseason, like early on. He's really, really evolved as a playmaker, and it's become one of his greatest strengths. We're seeing him get guys in better positioning. We're seeing right team movement, right team adjustments in terms of getting in positions where Giannis can find them easier, lots of relocation, stuff like that. We can still see Giannis attack the rim, but he can also be a fantastic playmaker, even if he is hampered. So let's say he is, you know, not at full strength, 70 to 80%, let's say. He's still going to make a massive impact out there on the floor, regardless of whether he's like fully attacking in transition or anything.
Yeah, I think the point on him just being the screener in pick and rolls is just he becomes valuable there, because anytime you do something like that, it garners attention. You have to pay attention, especially for someone like Giannis, when he does not have the ball, if he's rolling to the rim, you got to pay attention to that. So I think, yeah, that's a great point there. I would love to hear what you guys have as one of the questions, either one of you guys from the Eurostep podcast, because we can just go back and forth between ours and yours and see what the questions are.
I mean, I think I've got... Oh, do you have a good one, Ron? I have a very basic one.
Okay, I was just going to start off with like sort of matchup questions here, because when...
Yeah, that was mine,
after
too.
Dante DiVincenzo went out in the Miami Heat series, the Bucks have been playing big. They've been starting P.J. Tucker for the majority of the time, sans one game. The Suns' two best players are obviously elite, obviously just incredible, in Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They are a little small. And obviously they've made that to their advantage. How do you see like Chris Paul and Devin Booker sort of matching up against like a Drew Holiday and a Chris Middleton on the defensive end?
I think this becomes a much easier question to answer when you have Mikal Bridges on your team, because then you have to worry about it less. So Mikal is going to match up on Middleton, I would imagine. He takes the best perimeter assignment of every player throughout the season. And I actually feel super confident in that because Mikal is really long. He's not super strong. So he tends to do better against like the Luka Doncic's, the Donovan Mitchell's of the world than say a Kawhi Leonard, Paul George type. So he's going to be on Chris. I think Devin Booker is probably going to take the Drew Holiday assignment. That would be my guess.
Oh, really? Oh, I figured Book on PJ and then CP
what
on
they
Drew.
Chris Paul is a good helper at this point in his career. He's smart. Mm. He's not going to be out of place. Actually, so it's kind of interesting you brought that up, Ty, because really they're the inverse of each other. You look at Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Like, Chris Paul's a smart team defender. You're not going to catch him sleeping, but he's just small and he's just old. And so they're going to hide him on a corner shooter like PJ and then say, hey, you can help off him if you don't think PJ's going to make the shot. Booker is bigger and he's stronger and he's motivated. We've seen him in these playoffs. Like, he's motivated by the idea of playing solid one-on-one man defense against like tough players. Like, he takes that as a challenge that he embraces it. Where Booker tends to fall asleep on defense is if you put him in too many actions and like someone slips behind him backdoor. So if they don't allow that to happen by putting him on a guy who's going to control the ball most of the possession, like Drew, I think they would actually live with that. They would be pretty happy with that matchup. And then so Chris Paul is probably going to be on PJ.
Fascinating. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Yeah, and I do want to ask you guys too. You do think PJ is going to start? Like, I just want to start from there.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Like, no question. Okay. He's just proven too much. The Bucks' identity this postseason has been defense. I mean, their offense has been here or there, which is shocking because most of the regular season, they were offensively much better. I think maybe playing PJ a lot more is maybe what changed that around. But the Bucks are so huge on defense. Budenholzer's always been big on defense. I think, you know, for the shooting woes that we've seen at times, PJ on offense, the offensive rebounding has been huge. That's the one place that offensively he offers a lot and has made a big impact for the Bucks. And I think, although CP is one of those players, I think Zach Lowe's piece was great on him about just like every possible little thing he's going to exploit. And I think that includes like he'll probably stop PJ from getting some boards just by either flopping well or, you know, staking out position and just getting it or tapping it out or something. I don't think PJ will eat there like he did against Trae Young, but I do think he'll be able to make an impact there. I think he starts for sure. Rohan, do you agree?
I mean, after the Atlanta series where you kind of were like, oh, maybe starting Bobby Portis would be a good idea here, and they still didn't. Yeah, they're going PJ for sure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Haliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Yeah, and this is all under the assumption that Giannis plays for me, because my question, I had a very similar question to what you guys had, is who guards Jrue Holiday in particular. I'm assuming that, first of all, I want to just preface all of this by saying the Suns have been very willing to switch on just about everything so far. I think Giannis presents a different challenge where they may attempt to not switch on him, which is a little bit easier for a guy who's likely not going to pull up from the three-point line behind screens as often as maybe
don't
he could.
Him.
And also, please. Also, he tends to attack.
Please, actually, don't tempt him.
He tends to attack without a screen a lot of times too. So, you know, you don't have to worry about switching in those scenarios as well. So I'm just assuming Ayton on Lopez, Crowder on Giannis, Mikal on Chris. And I think when at that point, then you have Devin Booker and Chris Paul, and you're looking at PJ and Jrue. And I think Sam said it right. And I think this is something that the Hawks did, right? Trae Young was sort of hiding on PJ Tucker a lot of the times. PJ Tucker, not much of a movement guy.
Yeah. We love him.
As we all know. I love PJ Tucker. And the Suns revived his career, right? They're the ones that brought him back from China. And he just now in Media Day, he called it his second home. Eddie Johnson, the guy who is the color commentator for the Phoenix Suns, used to say that PJ Tucker might as well have a couch in the corner because he just sits there and waits for the ball. And so, you know, yeah, Chris Paul on him, I think that's probably the right way to go, especially with what he's shooting right now. PJ Tucker, I love him. Not shooting very well in the playoffs so far. So you can kind of help off of him a little bit more. And I think you're right, Ty. I think that Chris Paul is going to try and bait him into as many fouls as possible when he crashes those offensive boards. The Bucks have been one of the better offensive rebounding teams in the playoffs so far, and the Suns have been one of the worst. So I think trying to negate that advantage in any way possible, if it's Chris Paul, it's not going to be boxing out, right? It's not going to be going over a guy and getting a rebound. He's going to have to use his brain, and that means his body will go limp as soon as PJ Tucker tries to climb him in any way possible. And I think Sam brought up a great point with Devin Booker on Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday is an interesting one because, first of all, every single series so far, they have been trying to pick on Devin Booker defensively, and it really has yet to work, because the best way to pick on Devin Booker defensively is to get him off the ball and try and backdoor cut on him, or try and get it, swing the ball to him and to whoever he's guarding and try and shoot before he can close out. That's like the best way to do it. And that's actually kind of hard to do, to pick on somebody off the ball like that. So more often than not, they've been getting the switches and attacking him, and he's held his own. I mean, he's strong. He doesn't have long arms. He's strong, but he's smart, and he's capable of holding his own on the ball. So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for him. In a way, I think with the kind of effort that Devin Booker is going to expend guarding somebody like Jrue Holiday, who's going to have the ball more often, and then taking the best defender on the Bucks in the offensive side, for the entire series, he's going to be a bit like, I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Paul ended up with more offensive stats by the end of this series, I guess I could say, because I think Devin Booker is going to have a little more of a challenge on both sides of the ball than Chris Paul will, depending on what you guys think, because I also would like to hear who you guys think is going to guard who from the Bucks end. But yeah, I agree with Sam, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to go through who I anticipate guarding who for the Bucks momentarily. But just on that thought of, like, the way to hurt Devin Booker, this reminds me a lot of, like, Harden and Kyrie, and especially Kyrie. Yeah. I mean, injured Harden just couldn't move. That was a different beast. But healthy Harden and Kyrie, like, I thought Kyrie played tremendous defense when he was healthy in that series. I thought the way you pick on him, and especially on Harden after he couldn't move, was, like, get them in action. So I think maybe too late for that series a little bit, but especially against Atlanta, Drew has been running a lot of ball screens and like throwing a lot of either oops to Brooke or Giannis, or just getting them the ball and, you know, one step away. And it's especially Brooke, his touch has been tremendous. I think Marcus Johnson, a Bucks color commentator, shared that nobody in the playoffs has a better field goal percentage in the restricted area. I think Ayton is second and Brooke Lopez is first. Lopez shooting like 81% or something. Like, his touch has been ridiculous and he's been huge for the Bucks, especially these last two games. So I hope even with a healthy Giannis, they find ways to get him working inside. Obviously, the spacing isn't perfect, but those two are going to play a lot together just because they're too good and the Bucks don't have enough options, quite frankly. I think if Drew continues to run a lot of pick and rolls, right, and like, you know, get moving to the paint simultaneously with a big guy, so you have to watch the lob, you have to watch the kick out. Drew himself is like really, I'll say, rounded into form attacking the basket. I mean, he's great all year. It's his best offensive skill, I think, because he's just so damn strong. But earlier in the playoffs, he was just kind of wishy-washy from everywhere. Lately, he seems like he's on a different level. So really hope we continue to see that, obviously. So I think that could be interesting if they put Booker like running around a bunch of screens or dealing with a bunch of screens. I think that sounds like it's going to be the optimal way to play it. I hope the Bucks don't just try to ISO him because, I mean, he's a big guy. He's got a chip on his shoulder. Like you guys said, nobody likes hearing about how they're a bad defender, certainly. So I hope that's not the play. And I think especially with a more limited Giannis, I hope it won't be. But my read, and I'd love to hear your guys' take and Rohan's take, I think we start with Drew on CP, PJ on Booker, Chris on Bridges, Giannis on Crowder, and Brooke on Ayton. And I think that Brooke-Ayton big man battle might sneakily end up defining the series. I think both of them have been so good. And it's like, will Ayton's youthfulness and strength and energy win out? Or Brooke Lopez's savvy? And he's pretty damn strong too. But those two are like, the way they play on both ends is going to be so, so big in
this series. So can I just ask, and I have a couple of follow-up questions, actually. I have a bigger one I want to talk about in a minute. But just from the outset there, first of all, I looked up the regular season stats. Drew played more possessions, on Chris Paul in the regular season. I actually came out thinking he was probably going to take Devin Booker here, but for you to say the opposite, he's probably going to take CP3 makes sense. Why PJ on Booker and not Middleton?
I was thinking Chris Middleton on Booker, considering the matchups we've seen throughout this postseason, because out of the two guards that you're going to play, Booker is going to be the guy moving around off ball a lot more than Chris Paul. So in the Heat series, we saw Chris Middleton take the Duncan Robinson matchup. In the Brooklyn series, we saw Chris take the Joe Harris matchup. I could see this sort of being a similar sort of mindset. Obviously, they're very, very, very different players. But I could see Chris Middleton on Devin Booker and put PJ on Mikal Bridges. Makes it a little bit easier for the Bucks' perspective. But Ty, what's your reasoning there?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, just think of the offensive loads that both players are going to have. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. I think Mike with like Booker and how much he's going to have to do and dealing with potentially guarding Drew Holiday. Like, Chris is going to have to do a ton on offense, especially early in this series, but really all the way throughout. PJ, not so much. I mean, we talked about a couch already. I mean, his quote from the Nets series on like, you know, do you feel like you have to score more? He basically said, no, like I'm guarding Kevin Durant. No, I don't. Like, do you know how much energy this takes? Like, I refute that notion. I'm kind of busy out here. And I think you'd rather dedicate, you know, hey, PJ, put 85% of your energy on playing great defense and then rebound and hit some threes, please. Whereas Chris is going to be an engine. And also, PJ's defense on Book at the end of that controversial regular season game, it was excellent. It was great defense. Like, I think he starts there. I mean, he started picking up Trey in game six. That might have been because Trey was pretty hampered, hard to say. But I think they would start with that. But, I mean, to the point on Drew playing more on CP, the Bucks like to throw waves of defenders. So wouldn't shock me at all if in game one, no matter who's out there, you see Drew, PJ, Chris, maybe even Giannis take shifts on Booker. I think that's been one of the things for them that's worked well defensively. Like, look at the way they guarded KD You would see Drew take the assignment. You would see Chris, obviously PJ, Giannis rarely, although that was the one everyone talked about. They're going to throw waves of defenders at these guys for sure. And that's one thing Bud has not been afraid to get weird with. Ever since I saw Giannis match up on Kyrie to start the Brooklyn series, I was like, okay, we might see some controversial defending decisions. But I think this is one area where Bud's tendency of like, I want to try everything out a little bit and see what works is actually pretty smart. Like, I think you can strike gold by doing that from time to time.
I just think PJ on Booker would present such an interesting narrative, maybe more so from our perspective than your guys, but it's because like 5 years ago, 6 years ago at this point there, when Booker was first drafted, there were interviews about how PJ Tucker was the guy, like he took him under his wing in practice. He beat the shit out of him. You know, just like just trained him like an 18, 19 year old Devin Booker on how to play. Like, these are the tricks that defenders are going to use against you. I don't know if he was thinking necessarily about the playoffs at the time. The Suns weren't a very good team, but like, this is what you have to do to become a better player. For that, I have no doubt that that made Devin Booker a better offensive player, going toe to toe with a guy as tough as nails as PJ in practice. For that to culminate in this matchup in the NBA Finals would just be pretty funny. And I think he has his advantages. You know, Booker's he's a bigger guard. He likes to use his strength in order to try and create separation. And I don't think he would get really any of that against PJ. But I think the other thing you have to worry on the other end of the spectrum is just PJ's quickness with where he is at this age is not what it once was when he was in his heyday. And so, you know, I think Bud would probably be pretty quick to make that adjustment. If he saw PJ getting blown by, he would put Chris on him instead.
I think it's almost as simple as Devin Booker went from 18 to 24 and PJ Tucker went from 30 to 36 in that time. And that's a big difference as far as athletic primes. But I actually think PJ Tucker could do I saw what he did to Kevin Durant. And of course, Kevin Durant, you can't stop Kevin Durant. We all know how it works. Like, it's almost similar to the way that Suns fans talk about DeAndre Ayton guarding Giannis, for example. Where DeAndre Ayton does a relatively good job, but you still can't, what are you going to do? You still can't stop him. And I think PJ Tucker with KD, that's how it was. It's just about sort of making that first option disappear and forcing him to that second, third, or fourth option. And I think PJ could do that. So I think that's interesting. I imagine, Sam, I know you had a question that you said was related to defense. I think that we probably have a similar question. So I'd like you to get to that one and see if we
okay,
can do
well, I don't know. Maybe it's the same. Maybe it's not. But I think we can only spend so much time talking about like the initial matchups, because ultimately those initial guys, this is what I'm most curious about with the Bucks. The biggest reason for me personally, from the outsider perspective, to buy stock in what the Bucks were doing this year, despite the worst regular season record, the reason it all made sense to me that this was still a team that I took very seriously the entire playoffs, was because you guys started switching. You perfected the drop defense years ago. I feel like Milwaukee was like maybe the first team to do that in the NBA in the modern era. And then, you know, obviously a drop defense, A, it only goes so far in the playoffs kind of in general. That's kind of what the theory is. But B, the Suns specifically are very good at picking apart a drop defense because of Booker and Paul. They're just, Chris Paul's a 60% mid-range shooter when he wants to be. It's tough to stop that if you're going to drop a guy back. You guys started switching much more, even with Trey back in game 6. And so I think that's really interesting in talking about what you're going to do, how comfortable you're going to feel about switching against the Suns in this series. Specifically, I want to nod my cap or tip my cap over to friend of our podcast, Kevin O'Connor, because he just said this on the Ringer NBA show. He said, using Second Spectrum data, the Suns scored only 0.8 points per possession in the Clippers series versus switches, which is putrid. It's terrible. And we scored over 1 point per possession against basically everything else that they tried to do, whether they trapped or hedged. We've seen teams try to trap and hedge against Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And what we found is either the role players are too good and the guards are too good at like making those cross court passes, like to find an open shooter in the corner. Or if it's Chris Paul, he's just, his processing speed is too fast. You can't like double Chris Paul because he just finds the open man every time. But if you switch, that can muck up what the Suns are trying to do a little bit. So how confident are you two in just the theory of the Bucks being able to switch continuously, kind of more as a go-to defensive scheme throughout the series? Do you think it's something Bud is even interested in trying, or that we'll see from early?
I think we're going to see it at some point during the series. We will probably not see it right away, even though we probably should. If you're going to go out there and sort of go in a drop scheme against the Atlanta Hawks and Trae Young in game one, when you know that you need to switch that, you're going to probably do the same thing against the Phoenix Suns here. Even though they did learn that later on, like you mentioned, like switching really, really, really was effective in that series, they're going to start out and they're going to have that mentality like, okay, beat our base scheme and then we'll go out and adjust. Whether that's the right thing to do or not is a different debate, but that's what they're probably going to end up doing. But I do think they have the personnel to be a good to great switching team, as we've seen. And I think it could really work against the Suns team. Like, the prominent matchup here is like, what if you get Brooke Lopez switched onto Chris Paul, right? Like, that's the ultimate, like, oh no, what are we going to do here sort of thing. We saw that in the Atlanta series, given different players and different skill sets. But Brooke Lopez has sort of been holding his own. He's been holding his own on the perimeter over the last couple of years. Ty likes to joke about him being deceptively long, and it's like,
oh. It's not a joke. He literally is.
Like, it's not deceptive if you know who he is, whatever.
It's deceptive.
Sure. But he is a massive, massive human being, like 7 foot, nearly 300 pounds or something. Like, he can get into some passing lanes and get into his vision. These things sort of happen when you're a massive human being. Like, he's effective on the perimeter, given he's not going to, it's not the greatest thing. That's not your first option. You're not like, okay, Brooke Lopez, go out there and guard Chris Paul or Devin Booker. But he can hold his own on possessions, and it makes him work and makes them think, like you were mentioning. It just makes them go to their second and third options, like, oh, this is something that I don't want to really take on right away if I'm the ball handler. Maybe we should try something else. And that's the worst possible matchup.
Yeah, I think, thankfully, the one difference, even the Bucks' default drop right now at this point in time versus even during parts of the regular season against Utah in particular, I would imagine Milwaukee probably switches 1 through 4 on the perimeter pretty much immediately. They've been doing that a lot more and not, I mean, they were dropping on guard stuff, and like Donovan Mitchell was just laughing and hitting threes in their face in the regular season. It was brutal. I think we'll see that right away. It wouldn't shock me if they started dropping to start the game and under the assumption or the taking the bet, like, if your whole offense, Phoenix, is mid-range jumpers and we're executing offensively, we probably get enough points per possession on the other end for that to work. And I think in the Atlanta series, I mean, they were better when they switched, like literally switched to switching. But even game one, they should have won that game. They couldn't rebound late or score. They really fell apart late in that game. But, you know, Trae puts up 48 and the Hawks barely eked out the win. I think the bet is not always terrible. I don't think it's going to hold up over a 7-game series against two guys as great from the mid-range as CP and Booker. But I think we're going to see some of it until the Suns manage to punish it enough. And then we'll see the switching. And I think, you know, people are going to say Bud is stupid for that, which is fine. I mean, I've said that for a lot of reasons in the past, although we're riding with him now, baby. But I do think part of it also is like, I don't know if Brooke Lopez can play big minutes and switch constantly for 7 straight games of a series. Like, he's huge. He's not very young. And it's kind of just preservation. I mean, he works hard no matter what. He's such a fulcrum of that defense. But obviously, you know, him having to go out to the perimeter and mess with a Chris Paul or Booker is a lot more work intensive than timing and the thought of playing drop defense, which is more cerebral. So I think we'll see it. I don't think the Bucks are going to, you know, lose 4 straight games or 4 total games because of a complete unwillingness to go to switching. I think we're going to see switching as early as game one. But I do think the Bucks are going to try that bet at least a few times. Like, you know, if we drop and everyone stays home on shooters, which that was their worst sin in past years, 2019 conference finals especially, they're dropping and helping one pass away. And Kawhi just had a buffet of easy shots and passes. If they stay home on shooters and drop, it's like, listen, Book, CP, you guys might get yours, but maybe your teammates aren't involved. Maybe we don't give up lobs. And maybe, you know, even great mid-range shooters, it's not the most efficient. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they start dropping. Be interesting to see, A, how it works early on. I would assume not super well. And B, how long they stick with it.
Tight. I'll be honest. hearing you say that the possibility of the Bucks just sort of giving up whatever is available in their mid-range to the Suns, every single Suns fan listening to this is just ecstatic at the thought of that, because that tends to be what the Suns want. Like, they kind of just play for that. And with Devin Booker and Chris Paul being literally two of the best mid-range shooters in the NBA, that makes it really hard for me. And Sam, I did have this question essentially almost exactly as you worded it. My question, though, even extends beyond that, in that if the drop does not work, is there a point that Bud will start to pull Brooke Lopez's minutes? Because I even think beyond that, if they do start switching, if the Bucks do start switching, assuming that Giannis is healthy, right? That's the preface on all of this podcast here. I'm not sure that Brooke Lopez can continue to play. Now, I appreciate that you guys mentioned that you're a little more confident in him on the perimeter than I am. I do think it's a little interesting that the Suns have three guys that attack in three different ways on those switches, being that Devin Booker is like a true three-level scorer. He might hit you with a step-back three. He might get past you, pull up from mid-range and try and get fouled. He might get to the rim. Cameron Payne is essentially the sort of analytics-type player. If he gets a big pulled out to him on the perimeter, he's going to try and blow by you to the rim. If he hits that jab step, the big backs up, he's just going to shoot the pull-up three. And then Chris Paul is sort of that side-to-side guy that's going to sort of rock you to sleep and try and pull up from mid-range. And I just think the combination of those three guys...
But can I ask a question I'm dying to ask? After you finish making this point, I have something I need to know.
Okay. The combination of all three of those guys and the way that they can attack Brooke Lopez in particular on those switches, I think is going to put a lot of pressure on Bud to do something that the Bucks appear to be resistant to do, and that's really just put Giannis sort of at center, because regardless of who Brooke Lopez is guarding in that situation, if the Bucks start switching, that's the guy that's going to screen, right? It's going to be that guy that screens. If it's Jay Crowder, if it's DeAndre Ayton, if it's Mikal Bridges, regardless of who it is, they're going to work that switch to try and get one of the guards on them. So I think the question I think for me was, would the Bucks be willing to switch early, which it sounds like maybe you guys are thinking they're not going to. And even beyond that, at what point would they be willing to even potentially go smaller, right? They're so huge, and switch with that lineup instead of with Brooke Lopez on the floor. That's interesting. But Sam,
the fact that you mentioned those three guards. I want to credit our friends over the 7 Seconds or Less podcast for this idea, but you just reminded me of it. I wasn't going to ask this. Ty and Ron, we've talked about Cameron Payne, Devin Booker and Chris Paul together as kind of like a secret weapon lineup for the Suns in the past. We talked about how we've wanted to see it more than we actually have. They've only played it in very short spurts, the three guards all together. But
the numbers are very good.
The numbers are very good. I just want to say, because this is a series, theoretically, you guys have Drew. Drew is awesome. Middleton can hold his own. After that, it's kind of like just a lot of big wing stoppers and not a lot of quick guard stoppers. Do you know what I mean? If the Suns double down on the strategy of, we don't have the size, like, you guys are going to get offensive rebounds in this series, so let's just double down on what we're good at and kill you with speed and try to maximize dribble penetration in a lineup. If the Suns play the three guard lineup with, like, Cam Payne is now suddenly the shooting guard, Devin Booker's the small forward, how do you think you would guard that? Like, who's taking that third assignment, and what do you think about that?
To answer Mike's question first, the Bucks went small with Giannis at five in game one against Atlanta to close the whole fourth quarter. So we'll see it. I mean, part of it depends on how much Giannis can play, because if Giannis can't play a ton, they just need Lopez, and they're going to keep working to find ways to play him, because there just aren't enough alternatives. Like, extended run with Bobby Portis as your small ball five. Although switching is his thing on defense, it's the one thing he does. He does it well-ish. They drop with Portis, it's just hell. But it's bad, yeah. So I think you kind of have to play Brooke more depending how much Giannis can play. It's going to be tough for him to guard those three guys for sure. But his thing, really, he's going to try and make guys shoot over him. That's what he does. Like, he'll concede that extra step and just – I don't have the analytics. I'm sure they're out there if – you know, friend of the timeline KOC wants to pull him up on Second Spectrum, by all means. But it feels to me like guys shoot very poorly over Brook Lopez on the perimeter. I think you'd have more success trying to get by him, but I do think he manages to stay a half step farther back than most players would and just give himself a chance to at least disrupt the shot of a guy going past him. But so I think you're going to see there are going to be shots over him, potential there. I think he just defends them well because he is deceptively long. Just wait.
Deceptively long.
Everyone will
KOC,
see.
If you're listening, by the way, hit both of us up with your second spectrum plug.
Yeah.
We would appreciate it.
Please. As for the three-guard lineup, I think they would just have to involve Chris, PJ, and Drew to start. Like, with Dante going down, and Dante is not a perfect player by any means, but he's a solid to good defender of guards.
Yeah.
And the Bucks just they don't have any other of those. I mean, Forbes is bad. I think Teague is probably going to get opportunities after game six.
Redemption story.
Terrifying.
It's a good redemption story, right?
No, there's one Jeff Teague game during the playoffs. We had it. It's over.
I think that is true as well, but it's that or Forbes. And Forbes has just been so bad. And when the shot isn't falling, he just offers nothing. So I think that the biggest question for me, and it's not, we've already kind of covered it indirectly. It's not one we have to spend a lot of time on. But it's probably going to determine the series is like, can the Bucks size down defensively? That's what they're going to have to do. They need bigger guys to guard smaller Suns players. And we'll see how much Phoenix goes with a three-guard look. Obviously, the Bucks' bet there is like, do as well as we can sizing down and mash the boards entirely and just keep trying on offense.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, even offensively, you know, make those guys guard a somebody Giannis or somebody Lopez pick and roll and let those guys mash too. I think that's what they have to do. I like the Bucks know that they absolutely cannot like, oh, we'll run out Drew and Teague for extended minutes so we can guard little guys. Like, no, the better bet is to play the bigger guys who aren't ideal fits, but they're just much better. And that's what we've seen them do. I mean, the guard minutes off the bench have been so scant. Pat Connaughton's probably going to have to get involved and guard some of these guys, which he's been okay. I think he's more of a forward than a guard at this point.
He's only been okay. I thought you,
his numbers should be in the Raptors.
Yes, that's what this, I was going to ask you about this. You weren't supposed to bring it up that soon. Why should Pat Connaughton's number be in the Raptors?
Please.
Ty, please explain it to our audience. Why do you think this?
So, most of it has to do with the Brooklyn series so far, though he was very good in game six as well against Atlanta. So that was bolstering my case. But my case for that, and we might see another series like this round. The Bucks ended up with six playable guys against Brooklyn, and he was one of the six. And they ended that series just playing six guys, and he held up, and he was huge in game seven. I don't think they win game seven without him. Like, it's not a great case. I realized this after self-reflection. But I just said it because, like, no one expected this from Pat. Nobody expected ever, even the most ardent baseball fans, for Pat Connaughton to be able to be one of six players who logs minutes and the Bucks beat a Kevin Durant team on the road. Like, he stepped up so huge and has been so much more important than anyone, myself included. I thought he had a good regular season, but he's become a playoff minute able player. And it's not that he's been
playoff
tremendous.
One might call
it's
him,
just that
right.
He's no. Don't do that to my guy. But just the fact that he was able to step up and like sponge up some minutes when they just needed him to and not be a net negative. Again, it's like the worst
so
case.
Basically, Ty's argument for hanging Pat's jersey and being a pillar of the franchise is, hey, the expectations were so low, but you played.
No, the case is he showed up out of nowhere and was an integral part, one of
that
six guys.
We can put...
No, you left out the integral part of a potential. It's if they win, so an integral part of a title.
If you win, you put Pat Connaughton's jersey in the rafters. If we win, Torrey Craig's jersey is going in the rafters.
I saw that coming.
We call it
not even hurt.
We
call
it a deal.
Yeah.
Sure.
How did that happen? What the hell happened? What? Why couldn't Torrey Craig play on the Bucks? And how do you think cash considerations will be guarding him?
You're an asshole for
this.
Well.
I think cash considerations is going to hold up real well. I think they have a solid bag. Like, they'll be doing well. But
I don't think Bud was a big fan. of Torrey.
It's so weird.
Well, I will say, you guys have a plethora of guys who just go out and get boards. And, like, we needed that. Torrey's our second best rebounder after DeAndre Ayton. No joke. In our playoff rotation. But you guys didn't need another one of those guys, necessarily.
Well, they got PJ, like, the same day. And I think if they don't get PJ, there's no way they do that. But I think it was like, we already have so many wing players. I mean, look at the roster. Literally, the rotation in these playoffs, he's not going to play anymore. I think part of it was not a great fit. Part of it probably an agent favor. Like, we know you're not going to play now that we have PJ, so here, go to a good team. I'm guessing the Bucks, like most people, did not expect to see Torrey Craig in the playoffs when they made that trade. They probably don't do it if they see that one coming. But I think that was a lot of it. And but yeah, it looks terrible now, obviously, that he's playing good minutes on their opposition.
I mean, PJ's great. You guys got a good end of that deal either way. It led to PJ Tucker, so I guess it makes sense there. I would love to hear another question from you guys that you have for this series.
I still have my one from before, but Rohan, if you have one, you want to uncork?
Go for it.
My question is really, and this might sound dumb, but like, who's going to be the Jay Crowder of this series? So
my answer is
I don't know how aware. Well, I think there's two options. If you would let me finish, Rohan.
Oh my God.
Your number is not going up in the rafters anytime soon. Just Pat. But Jay, if you guys, I don't know how aware Suns people are of this, but like Jay Crowder is nightmare fuel for Bucks fans because in 19, he was amazing against Giannis. And I think Giannis, you know, health aside, is much better and more well equipped now, but he was tremendous on that end. And he turned around and shot an obscene percent from three in that series as well, and wasn't as good the rest of the playoffs, I don't think. I know this last round, he wasn't very good shooting the ball at all. I think that's going to be interesting. Like, just a random side, smaller question is like, how many threes can Bridges and Crowder hit? Because obviously the Bucks are going to be focused on the three players, you know, Chris, Paul, Devin Booker, and Ayton are going to be so integral. I think those guys are going to get some spaces. We'll see how they punish. But Crowder is obviously one option to be Jay Crowder. 2019 Eastern Conference semis, Jay Crowder to be specific. But I assume he's going to guard Giannis a lot, and obviously he's going to have opportunity to hit threes. I think the other option is PJ Tucker, who is probably going to play a lot of important defensive assignment minutes. And he's the guy on the Bucks, the one guy, I think, who is like going to, outside from Giannis, who's going to be able to shoot a lot of threes. Like, teams just aren't that worried about him. I don't know. I'm eager to hear what you guys think, but also it's just kind of an unknowable random thing. But, like, either one of those guys randomly hitting 48% from deep could end up swinging the series, and that's the, terrible swing factor aspect of the playoffs and the finals
in
particular.
First of all, I had to look up the series stats. Right. So the one you're talking about was last year, correct? Oh, wait, shit. It is
2020.
It was 2020.
2020.
I think I said 19. Yeah, it was 2020. My bad.
So hold on, 1 second.
Yeah, it was a 2020 semis, the bubble
just
series.
Evaded.
When I bet on the Heat to beat the Bucks. No, sorry guys,
you're cursed.
Can I just say just while you look that up, Sam? Jay Crowder is the one player on both teams that has played in the NBA Finals, and even the finals that he played in was the one in the bubble. Which I think when people talk about the environment of the NBA Finals, part of what's factored into that environment is the absolute insane crowds, which obviously were absent when they played in the bubble. But even having that little bit of experience in the bubble, playing in those finals where the Miami Heat were beat up after the Eastern Conference, it's tough. You know, it's just interesting to see if that will matter at all. It's just kind of interesting. Nobody else has played in an NBA Finals game.
This is absurd. Sorry, Mike. He averaged 15.2. I'm telling you guys something you already know. But just for our listeners, 15.2 points per game in that series against the Bucks last year. But he took 10.6 shots per game, 10.2 threes. Which means Jay Crowder, basically, he may have taken like one layup. Like, I don't know what that one other shot was, but basically every single shot he took in that series last year was a three. He chucked over 10 of them a game, and he shot 43% on those.
Mm-hmm. This is where the nightmare fuel comes from that Ty was referring to.
So
Wall doing that playing exceptional defense on Giannis. Like,
no, but to your point from earlier, Ty, if you stay home on shooters and just give Paul, I know you didn't phrase it as give Paul and Booker what they want in the mid range, but it's kind of what it sounded like. You know, if you stay home on shooters and make Paul and Booker shoot in the mid range, Jay Crowder's not going to take 10 threes per game. Mikal Bridges isn't going to take 10 threes per game. But I would argue, like, you would probably much rather help on our superstars and force our role players to prove that they can actually do that. Because Jay Crowder, while he can, like, maybe there is a reason he gives you nightmares, he's a very streaky player at the same time. And he will shoot 20% from three in one game and then 60% the next. So I think that'd probably be a pretty good bet for the Bucks to make our role players actually step up.
Just not Cameron Johnson, who I want no part of Cameron Johnson.
Well, and I'll pass also on that. This leads me just kind of to a follow-up question for you guys. As long as we're talking about three-point shooting, what's the deal with that? Because I think there's
that's a loaded question.
So for those who don't know, the Bucks shot 38.9% from deep in the regular season. That was top five in the NBA. You're down to 31% in the playoffs. And a big part of that, look, I'll say from the get-go here, a big part of that is losing DiVincenzo, right? A big part of that is not feeling comfortable playing Bryn Forbes, like, heavy minutes in the playoffs because he's Bryn Forbes. So that, like, those two things matter. But
and P.J. Tucker.
Yeah, and P.J. Tucker. But, like, P.J. Tucker played in the regular season some, too. Mostly, to me, it's like, I think there's a glass half full and a glass half empty way of looking at it. Like, Chris Middleton's shooting 34% from deep these playoffs. Jrue Holiday's at 30%. Giannis obviously is Giannis. He's not going to give you a ton there. But for the other two guys, it seems like kind of aberrant. And I guess the glass half full way to look at it is, well, we've made it this far. Our offense has been, I know your defense is kind of carrying you, but your offense has been good enough to get to the NBA Finals. If you just start shooting 39% instead of 31% for a full series, if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm maybe thinking, yeah, this will be easy. The glass half empty way to look at it is, well, why the hell has it been so long we're still shooting 31% from deep? So what do you guys think?
One more name to mention on just like the Chris Drew group of like, wow, why is that guy not hitting any threes? Bobby Portis, I think 47% in the regular season is at like 30% in the playoffs, despite most of his looks being very, very good, like trailer or corner or anything else. And Portis has played well. All those guys, of course, the first two more so, have played well in spite of that. I think at this point, there is like the feeling among Bucks fans, and I share it, is like threes would just feel like found money at this point. Like they're so used to winning without hitting a lot of them, and defense is huge in that. Being monstrous scoring at the rim is a lot of that too. I think that's been more important even. Like I think there's been games where the Bucks looked like they were going to lose game six against Atlanta. Was one of them where like the other team is hitting all these threes and you just know the Bucks won't, but they keep getting inside and they just keep engineering buckets. I think that's been huge for this team. And I think it's almost like I do think the one advantage the Bucks have over the Suns, I think people would look at this and go, if they're just looking at that particular topic, well, if everyone's healthy, Giannis is probably the best player in the series. That might be it. That might be all people say. I mean, I think a lot of people would think, again, when healthy, the Bucks' third guy is probably better than Phoenix's third guy. I don't know if it's super decisive now that Ayton's been tremendous in this playoffs. Maybe it's not even Ayton. I don't know. Maybe it's freaking campaign with how good he's
been.
Ayton's
our best player now, you ask me.
I guess, yeah, maybe.
He's our most impactful player. Yeah. He's not our best player. It's a really weird kind of conversation.
I want to dig into that in 1 second. But I do think with the one advantage the Bucks have is like, they've been through more adversity in getting this far. Not that Phoenix hasn't seen any. I mean, obviously, you win without CP and everything else. And it's a great group, and I think they're ready for this spot for sure. But the Bucks have been in like multiple scenarios where it's like, oh, our playoffs is probably just over. I mean, they sweep Miami, sure, but they needed overtime in game one, and that Miami team stunk. And I think if they lose that game one, things could have gotten a little bit ugly. Probably not, because they were so talented. But they could have. I mean, that team was nightmare fuel demons too for a lot of Bucks fans. But the way they lost game two in Brooklyn, oh my God. I mean, we thought the run was over, the core would have to get broken up. We called it an organizational failure. The way they lost game five against Brooklyn was pretty much as ugly, and they persevered and win. Game four against Atlanta, you start out flat, then you lose Giannis. The fear is maybe for the postseason, and they lose that game, but he's healthy and they come back and win the series. Like, they've been just punched in the face point blank so many times that to still be here, I feel like that might be working for them more than anything else. And the 3-point shooting is part of that too. Like, they've gotten pretty much no positive variance luck, whatever you want to call it, whether it's luck or skill, I don't know. It never works out for the Bucks, whatever it is. But they've won anyway. And like, even in the first round, everyone said Forbes got lucky. I think he was one made total three over his season average against Miami. Like, he wasn't nuts. Like, he was able to play because Miami stinks on offense, and he just shot a lot and he made about his usual amount. So I think that's just another factor in, like, these Bucks just keep finding ways to win. I think this might be their toughest challenge yet. The only reason I say might is because Kevin Durant in that series was just like otherworldly. I mean, I still can't believe they beat that guy four times, help aside. But I think, I don't know if anyone, I don't think anyone, fans, coaches, players, is counting on Milwaukee suddenly being a great 3-point shooting team. But God, it would be nice.
Yeah, I think the, I'm about to give like a fun stat I just found, and it can be taken two ways. Like, one, if you're positive for the Milwaukee Bucks, it's like, oh, there's so much variance, and it's like, oh, you can do so much better. And if you're like, want to take the opposite road, it's like, my God, they stink. So in the regular season, the Bucks were sixth in the NBA on wide open threes, 41.7%, according to NBA's tracking data. In the playoffs so far, they are dead last with 30.9% on wide open threes. Dead last. And they're, so like, the positive thing is they're dead last on wide open threes, and they're in the NBA finals. And there's still, you can shoot better than that. You technically can get worse, I guess, but statistically, you would think that it would go higher than that.
Yeah, can't really get worse than dead last. I mean, technically, I guess that's just what dead last is. But yeah, I found that to be something that stood out to me as well. I think a lot of this series and people who don't like basketball, first of all, people who don't like basketball aren't listening to either one of our podcasts, but people who don't like basketball hate hearing something like this, but like, whatever team gets hot from three, that's going to affect the series dramatically. That was one of the things that I had written down. It's not super, super fun to say that, but I think that's going to have a big effect. And I think sort of we can call that Jay Crowdering, I guess. Sam has a great point about Jay Crowder. He's the king of averaging 10 points a game, but doing that by scoring one in one game and 20 in the next. So you never know quite what you're going to get from Jay Crowder. And it would be interesting if PJ Tucker did that. I don't know that, like, the thing about Jay Crowder that I think is interesting is that the volume of threes that he shoots, nothing bothers him. He'll shoot 35 in a game if he gets the ball open at the 3-point line if he wants to. And I'm not sure that PJ Tucker is quite like that in the way that Jay Crowder is, especially because Jay Crowder kind of roams along the 3-point line a little more often as well. So that'd be interesting to see if it is something that PJ can do. But Ty, you had something you want to say about Ayton, which I would like to get to because we haven't talked too much about Ayton. I'd like to hear what you wanted to ask us about Ayton, and then we can get going.
Yeah, I really, and just quickly, I thought I was going to be able to correct you, Mike. I thought Crowder was in the finals with the Cavs, one of those years they got smacked. I forgot that Cleveland fans and everyone.
Yeah, they hated him.
He was so bad and they hated him so much they traded him to Utah. I think they got Korver back, actually. What really. So weird how some of these players have moved in the past. Bucks legend Kyle Korver. So yeah, never did. So you stand uncorrected. But my Ayton question is really like, how do you guys look at his role? I mean, you said he was the best player against the Clippers. I knew he was quite good and very consistent in that series. But like, how do you look at that matchup with him and Lopez, who has been one of the Bucks' best players, one of the core four really all year? I think he's been very, very important. I think going away from drop has meant he hasn't always looked the greatest, but I think these playoffs he's stepped up in particular, and he was so huge in games 5 and 6. Like, on either end, wherever you want to start, but like, obviously Ayton's going to be setting screens and rolling. Like, how much of a problem is he going to be there? How much is he going to ignore Lopez defensively to help on Giannis? I think that's going to be a huge part of the series, is like, what happens with those two when Lopez is away from the ball in the action? Like, is he going to come in and cut maybe and be able to rebound or do something there? Or because if he's just standing on the perimeter and Ayton can roam a little bit, I don't love Lopez shooting a lot of threes, although he has been weirdly dependable for the Bucks in a lot of ways these playoffs.
Yeah, I think he's shooting like 34% or something like that.
That's a very Brook
Lopez number. I think he's been doing that for like 5 years straight. But
yeah, and I think if you shoot a lot of them, that's a really good number. That's not a bad number, in my opinion. I just want to say, just from DeAndre, and just to understand, I think, where we are as a podcast, but also where Suns fans are in general, in the first round of the playoffs, DeAndre Ayton was matched up against a combination of Andre Drummond, who is Andre Drummond, right? We all know what he is, maybe the greatest rebounder of our time, but not much else, but also Anthony Davis. And then in the next round, the Suns swept the Denver Nuggets, which included Nikola Jokic, who was the MVP of the league. And the main reason the Suns were able to do that is because you just matched minutes of Nikola Jokic with DeAndre Ayton and just allowed him to guard him at all times and didn't worry about doubling, didn't send a second
never
guy at Nikola
trouble
Jokic, which just
either.
Sort of mess. Never got in foul trouble in that entire series. It just messes up their whole scheme. But even just starting there, the difference between AD, Andre Drummond, and Nikola Jokic is a dramatic difference. And then you go to the Clippers series, where he's matched up in a combination of Zubac, who's sort of a almost like a poor man's Ayton, if you will, in what Zubac is, and then the small ball that they run, right? They didn't even start a center for multiple games. So the challenges that DeAndre Ayton has stepped up to throughout this postseason, in my opinion, we've called it a leap more than once on this podcast. He has made another leap from where he was in the regular season, and his ability to step up to the challenge in each one of those series has just blown me away, and I think many Suns fans have been blown away by it. And so looking at Brook Lopez, in a lot of ways, Suns fans look at that and say it's a different challenge for him once again. It's a different kind of big man. And I would say that I feel confident in him to be able to rise to that challenge. One thing for you guys to know is Ayton tends to get better at playing against guys the more often that he does it. So whether that be throughout a series or throughout his career, he starts to understand them. He watches film, I think is the way to look at it. And he gets better over time. So I'm excited to see that matchup. I think it's a really interesting challenge for DeAndre Ayton, sort of balancing guarding him on the perimeter, help defense, and then the players around him rotating to help him out if he does end up helping in the paint, which I think he's going to have to if Giannis plays a lot. I think it's going to be a really fascinating thing. And I even think that you could see an extended stretch of these games, if Giannis is healthy, where DeAndre Ayton is guarding Giannis. And I think it's a whole different challenge for him once again, another MVP that he's going to have to guard on a regular
basis. Can I just say, we're an
basis.
Hour in, and like we didn't even mention that yet. Like, I want to bring up the stats of Ayton on Giannis, because I don't think it's just like a cute, like, oh, DeAndre Ayton's 22 years old. Like, maybe he could stop Giannis on one possession. He's done it before. And I pulled through NBA's tracking data all of Ayton's possessions on Giannis in the past. He's played a total of 19 minutes against Giannis through six games between his rookie season, his sophomore season, and this year, all regular season games. So I admit, like, if you don't want to take too much from it, that's fine. But Giannis in those games has scored 46 points when matched up against Ayton in 19 minutes. But he shot 14 for 35 from the field. He shot 18 of 23 from the free throw line, so he has gotten to the free throw line. If you tally up those field goals and those free throws with that point total, it comes out to a 51% true shooting percentage, which for Giannis Antetokounmpo, the two-time MVP who routinely posts 60-plus, is very bad. And if you go into this series with the prospect of Giannis being limited, I couldn't possibly be more confident in Ayton's ability defensively to handle whatever's asked of him, whether that's Giannis or Brook Lopez. They're different challenges. But I think defensively, he's at that point where whatever you toss at him, he's going to be able to handle. Now, on offense, because I remember Ty was talking about that first, he was like, oh, is he going to be a threat on the roll? I think the beauty of Ayton's offense at this point, it's kind of subversive. It's however much attention you want to pay to Ayton's offense is going to, that's going to heavily influence what you get out of him. So if his gravity is doing a lot of work and you decide to keep Lopez or a low a tagger close to him on those lobs, maybe he's not going to score a lot of points, but maybe Chris Paul and Devin Booker are going to get the pull-ups that they want in the mid-range. If you pay more, or the corners. If you pay more attention to the guards, Ayton's going to get some lobs. I mean, his offense is not really the go-to at this point. I think the reason it's so hard to sell the casual fan is DeAndre Ayton being, when I say he's the most impactful player on the Phoenix Suns at this point, I mean it. And 99% of that is on the defensive end because that's how good he's been through three rounds.
So is there any chance that, let's say the starting fives are what we expect and Giannis is playing, would Monty ever stick Ayton on Giannis and someone like Crowder onto Lopez?
Well, it's interesting you ask, actually, because when I looked at that data, Ayton logged significantly more minutes. I remembered in a game, because there was a game during Ayton's rookie season when we had...
Rookie year, Ayton was one of the best Giannis defenders ever saw. Since then, I feel like Giannis has gotten better, but that year... He was amazing.
We won one of those. I think we won both of those games, actually, somehow. We won at least one of those games that we had no business winning that regular season. We were a 19-win team. But it was such a storyline among Suns fans because, hey, we're a terrible team. Look at what DeAndre Ayton, our rookie, just did to Giannis. I remember that being a storyline. The matchup data claims that he's logged actually much more minutes in the two games this year with Monty Williams as the coach. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But I do, my suspicion, is Jay starts.
I think it would take a few Brook Lopez threes, I think, to do that. I think it might start the other way around. But if Brook Lopez starts hitting threes,
and look,
then they might switch it up.
What I just said with Giannis got to the free throw line against Ayton. If you're a Bucks fan, I'll say the same thing to you as I would have said to any other fan of a team we've played at this point. I said this, you know, to Nuggets fans too. If you can get DeAndre Ayton into foul trouble, you can win this series. Easily. Because the Suns don't have a backup center, and you're already so big, you grab a lot of offensive rebounds. If you get DeAndre Ayton out of the game, the Bucks are, I think, first in second chance points. The Suns are close to dead last among playoff teams. So just think about the opportunities to feast that you'll have. Your first look on offense doesn't even need to be efficient if DeAndre Ayton is out of the game, because then you can just clean up on Dario Saric. The problem is, DeAndre Ayton is one of the best centers in the NBA already at his young age at not being put into those positions. He's very good at using verticality. So it's not going to be easy, but if anyone can do it, it is Giannis Antetokounmpo. So we'll see.
Rohan, do you have a question?
No, it's just...
Anything?
I think it's going to depend a lot on what Brook Lopez can do both inside and outside. That'll dictate those matchups. Mike, you were talking about him hitting some threes, but also, like, if they're putting a smaller guy on him, he's just going to go out there and mash down low. Like, he will put whoever's smaller than him in the basket. And we saw that a lot during the Brooklyn series. We saw that during the Atlanta series. Like, if they go small, put a smaller guy on him, he's going to try to abuse that matchup, and he's so efficient. It's going to be a good shot no matter what. So that's going to be an interesting matchup, because not only does putting Ayton on Giannis sort of hamper Giannis maybe potentially, but you're also like, oh, what's the result of that? Is that going to lead to even more efficient shots? The mindset should be, let's get the ball out of the best player's hands realistically, but you're also posing like problems as a consequence of doing so. So it'll be a really interesting chess match to see what happens there.
Yeah. And two quick thoughts on that. One, the Bucks have gotten better as the playoffs have gone on when they see a Crowder-sized or smaller player on Lopez. Early, and especially in the regular season, they would like get it to him like 18 feet away and have him post up. And that's awful. He's way too slow. He does not make the decision quickly enough. If he gets doubled, it's like almost a surefire turnover, unless he just hits a silly shot. And he will hit silly shots, but they've been much better at like, okay, we're going to get you the ball 4 feet away. And you can dribble once or not dribble and just throw up a floater or whatever, and you're right there. And that's been much, much better. So hopefully when they do stick a small or hide a small on Lopez, the Bucks are continuing to like throw him lobs or get him in post position very, very close to the basket. The second quick thing, and this is something I noticed before Giannis' injury against Atlanta, you know, certainly Ayton's not the only good Suns defender. They have some great perimeter defenders, but as you mentioned, the one center, the one rim protector. Giannis had Capella on him a lot. And for a substantial part earlier in that series, like, he drags Capella out of the paint and he's kind of just sizing up in the middle of the floor. And the Bucks were cutting from all over and just getting really good looks at the rim, because if you get that first step and Capella's out of the paint, no one's really there to contest the shot. It's really hard for a perimeter player to help off of anyone and be able to defend that. So it will be interesting to see if Giannis can do better against Crowder and force the Ayton matchup, if the Bucks do similar things. It's almost like, it's not really, but like the old Kawhi salation when teams would just stick whoever Kawhi was guarding in the corner. It's like, let's get Giannis out of the paint and open up that space now that the big terrifying Ayton isn't there for other players to be able to get to the basket. So it'd be interesting to see if we see much of that at all.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. And I think that's where we would see, I guess from my perspective, where we would see the difference between the secondary perimeter defenders on the Hawks.
Oh, yeah. The Suns guys are so Mikal much Bridges, better. No Jay question. Crowder. No question.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'll say this before we get going here. I like the Bucks. I like
me too.
Their fans.
Me too.
I like you guys. And every series, I think we've gone into it. This is kind of the way I felt about the Nuggets. I didn't leave that Nuggets series feeling any bad way about the Nuggets either. I hate that it has to be you guys that are our enemies for this this one. But I think it's great. I think that in this specific series, if the Suns win, obviously first championship ever, revenge for the coin flip, something we
yep.
didn't even talk about.
Yep.
It would be amazing. If the Bucks end up winning, I would obviously be devastated in many, many ways. Happy for PJ Tucker. Happy for Giannis. Once I go through the stages of grief, I think mm-hmm. I would probably get there. But I appreciate that we get to go through this journey together. Blue Wire podcasts, all of us with Blue Wire. It's fun that we get to do this with you guys. I'm happy that you guys get to cover the finals as well. I think maybe we should all take a moment just to plug our Twitter accounts and our podcast real quick, since I know this is running on both of our feeds, if you guys want to go first.
Yeah, we'll have to do serious predictions after, but we'll make the people sit through our self-gratifying plugs first. I'm Ty, at Ty Windisch, TIWINDISCH on Twitter, one half of the Eurostep podcast, which is also found on Twitter, at Eurostep Podcast. That's GYRO Step, an allusion to Giannis. And
the greatest podcast name, I think.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
At least on our network.
We always tell people one day the content will be as good as the name, and then we'll be like the number one podcast in the universe. But that's found on all podcast platforms as the Eurostep Podcast Network. We've aligned with our friends at the Win on Six podcast, teamed up, super team, covering the Bucks. So there are four of us you'll hear regularly on that feed, breaking down all things Bucks, including a ton of collabs this postseason. But my Eurostep co-host, Rohan Kadi, take it away.
Well, I mean, you took everything else, so I guess I'll just plug myself. I'm on Twitter at RKATTIJR, and that's it. You covered everything else.
I'm efficient. What can I say? I'm Chris Middleton in games 3 through 7 out here.
I can go. I'm Mike. You can find me at Protected Pick. I'm the guy with the bag on his head. That's what most people refer to me as. Our podcast is called The Timeline, a Phoenix Suns podcast. At The Timeline Pod, if you want to follow us on Twitter. We record after every game. We've been doing that for the playoffs, but usually at least once a week, once it gets back to normal.
Yeah, I'm Sam, at S Cooper Hoops on Twitter. I just want to take a chance and echo what Mike was saying a minute ago. I like the Bucks. I think this is a great series for the league. I think we're still, us four and the other Bucks fans I know on my feed, we're still going to sling some shit at each other throughout the course of the series because, like, you know, it's all in good fun. Like, I like Denver fans, too. I legitimately like everyone on that roster except maybe Campazzo. But that didn't stop me. I mean, hey, but that didn't stop, you know, like you guys remember the when Jokic was ejected for the hit on campaign. Like, that's not going to stop me from being like, oh, fuck Jokic. You know, like, I'm, you know, it's Twitter. It's just Twitter. But still a massive respect for that fan base, a massive respect for this one. And I think this is just a really great series. Let's be happy that it's not Lakers Nets or some boring shit like that for a second. So great job, guys. Looking forward to seeing your coverage throughout the series, too.
Ty, I know you want us to do predictions. I'll tell you right now, we don't do predictions on our podcast. We try to stay away from them. If you want to rope us into them, I'd be willing to do a prediction for you guys, though, if you'd like.
Yeah, you guys are just going to cut it off of your feed? Only on the Eurostep feed?
No, I'd put it on.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'd love to hear yours.
Well, I mean, after they break the Bucks in six curse last time, after B. Jennings had said it, they had never won a series in six. Goes back to the 80s. I think New Jersey Nets was the last time they won in six, way back when. We hoped it would be against Brooklyn. That would have been super cool. Tie a knot, but oh well. Got to stick with Bucks in six. And I think it works kind of logically that, you know, Phoenix is gets home court. Wouldn't like to go to Phoenix for game 7 if we get that far. I would still believe enough just because, I mean, they won in Brooklyn. I think they could do it. but steal one of the first three Phoenix games, protect Fiserv, and you're there. So got to go with Bucks in six, man.
I'm going to say Bucks in seven. I'm going to say seven.
You would.
Because it's going to be – I think this is going to be a very even series. I think both teams have ways to attack each other and sort of get at it. So I think this is going to be a very even series. And I'm going to go Bucks in seven because I'm part of a Bucks podcast. So if it's seven, I'm choosing Bucks.
I'm going to go Sam, I'm going to go Suns in six. I mean, wow, what a shock that the Bucks guys pick the Bucks and the Suns guys pick the Suns. But I'll just say, like, I'm feeling at an all-time high with confidence in DeAndre Ayton, all-time high in confidence with Monty Williams. I think this team's rolling, and I think they've taken enough punches at this point for me to believe in their ability to take a few more and go all the way. It's not going to be easy, and I'm going to reevaluate that a lot depending on how Giannis looks. If he does play in game one, that's going to be very much like a game-to-game thing. But I'm feeling I'm feeling Suns in six. What about you, Mike?
I think I'll go Suns in six as well, but I'll be 100% honest. I'm about to make all the Bucks fans hate me. My initial thought was Suns in five. I'll be 100% honest. And I know you guys are going to hate that, and I know Bucks fans are going to hate that, but that was my initial thought about this series, just because matchup-wise and with Giannis's injury, it just kind of makes me feel like that's the way it could potentially go. But I think it could be, I could go either way. Ultimately, this is why I don't do, we don't normally do predictions, because ultimately it makes basketball less fun. I like when unpredictable stuff happens, and I'd like to watch the games play out before I make any sort of observations. But, I'll just say Suns in six for now.
I'm not that offended. Like, if you're factoring in Giannis's condition in that, not offended at all. That your team you cover is very, very good, and Giannis is very, very good and very, very important. But, final thought for me, and I don't mean to be the hogging the final spot or final thought guy. Like, if the Bucks start out 0-2, I mean, I wouldn't believe obviously Bucks in six anymore, but I won't count them out unless they're down 3-0 or they've lost four games and the series is literally over. Like, they've been that kind of team, almost Clippers-esque. And I know the Suns have beat the Clippers. And if the Bucks don't have Giannis to end it, like the Clippers didn't have Kawhi or at all,
Ty, then you probably beat the Bucks too.
Well, whatever. I weirdly trust the Bucks, and if you follow the Bucks for a while, you know why that's just a wild thing to say. This has been a great postseason for both of our fan bases, and I think I agree the league. I think it's been awesome to see these teams shine. Devin Booker is so cool, man.
Good luck, guys. It should be fun either way.
Regardless of how everyone here thinks that it's going to play out, this series is going to be a fun series no matter what. It is the NBA Finals. Before we do the outro, Ty, do we have a five-star review to be done?
We do, but I think this is the last new one we have. I know Apple takes a couple days to show them, so hopefully there's hundreds more about to pop up. But this is your moment, dear listener. Leave a five-star review on an Apple product, rating and review. Get it right on the air. Weigh in like Alex's llama did with the subject line, Ajax the Shadow Hunter. No idea what that's about, but five stars, so we are reading it. Alex's llama says, been a win in six and Lockdown Bucks listener for years and just happened upon Eurostep this playoff run. I feel like it meshes the best aspects of LOB/WI6 into one nifty package. I am a big fan of the collaboration pods between it and Win in Six, partially because of my years of loyalty/listenership, and also because it invites different perspectives from Jordan and Adam. Ty and Rohan are hit and miss. Just kidding. They are insightful and funny enough to keep this neurotic dude through the emotional roller coaster that is being a Bucks fan. Keep it up. The subject line, out of left field. The actual meat of the review, great. Inside jokes in there.
I know, that's the Bucks fandom, that's the best
emotional
part.
Roller coaster. The inside jokes are the best part, though.
Yes, hit and miss. The only way you would understand that is if I don't even remember what episode it was. It was part of a different.
Isn't real, and nothing is real.
Listen to all the pods. You'll figure it out eventually. But yeah, the inside jokes are fantastic. Ty, like you mentioned, leave a review so you can get it read on the air. And plus, it helps us out a lot, and we really appreciate it. And we've just appreciated all of the support. We've been getting massive support lately. And We really, truly do appreciate it. But we can wrap this up. Say thank you for listening to this episode of the Eurostep here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you did enjoy the show, make sure you are subscribed on your podcast platform of choice. And again, leave that five-star review so we can read it out on the air.
Stay safe, everyone. Go Bucks. Check out all of the content across the network. Again, check out the timeline, guys. We will talk to you next time, and go Bucks.